FM Positive Soul Music.
I hear the sound of a mighty rushing wind.
Welcome to Issues of Life on Spirit 88.3 FM. 60 minutes of news, prophecies, music, and the Word every Saturday from 8 to 9 p.m. Get revived, inspired, motivated, and warned about the times we are living in. Prophecies of old are unfolding right before our eyes every day. Verses in the Bible are today's headline news. Don't be ignorant, but be an informed believer. Join Brother Eben for the next 60 minutes and be blessed. Get this edition and others from spiritissues.info.
We'll be
good evening to our listeners. Thank you for tuning in. I'll be with you from now till 9 p.m. I'm Eben, and it's always a privilege to come your way. All right, so first we look at some of the news happening in the week, and then we'll be finalizing the deception series we've been on for some weeks now. Okay, so first, Russia threatens to march on Paris on the heels of launching second largest air assault of Ukraine war, killing at least 21 and damaging EU building. Okay, Russia has issued a terrifying warning to France as tensions between the two countries threaten to explode. The French president is the latest Western leader to be singled out for rough treatment by Kremlin propagandists and to become public enemy number one. The full-blooded attack appeared to be in response to some unflattering comments made recently by the Elysee Palace, okay, that's the presidential palace of France, resident about Vladimir Putin. During an interview with the French TV news network LCI, Emmanuel Macron called Putin a predator and an ogre at our doorstep. The latest threat came after Kiev was bombarded overnight by Russia's second largest aerial attack since the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, with at least 21 people killed, including 4 children, according to officials. The buildings belonging to EU or the European Union and the British Council were damaged in the airstrikes. Okay, we go to Iran, where we have Iran accuses 53 Christians of espionage after arrests, and authorities claim Bibles were smuggled into the country. So Iran's Ministry of Intelligence has accused 53 Christians of espionage and anti-security activities after arresting them in recent weeks. State media aired a video showing some of the detainees alongside confiscated Christian literature, including the Bibles, and they allege that they have smuggled these into the country. And in recent times, after the Israel-Iran war, they've stepped up security seriously, and they do random checks and all that. And the slightest connection you have to Christianity or Judaism or whatever, you will be arrested. You are seen as a criminal. You are siding with the Israelis. So there's a lot of persecution post the Israel-Iran fighting in recent times. Okay, so for those who have listened to this program at least for the last 6 years, there is this woman politician, Christian politician in Finland, that her case keeps as if they don't want the case to die, and it's one of the stark issues of persecution going on in Europe, and it's very unfortunate. So this is Finland. On October 30th, the Finnish state will once again drag Päivi Räsänen into court, this time at the highest level in what can only be described as one of the most brazen assaults on Christian freedom in modern Europe. For the third time in 7 years, prosecutors who attempt to brand a grandmother, physician, and long-serving parliamentarian a criminal for the crime of sharing the Bible verse online. Think about that for a moment. The nation that once gave the world Nokia and cutting-edge innovation is spreading and spending years and taxpayer money trying to prove that the Book of Romans is hate speech. If they succeed, Finland Supreme Court will etch into the precedent the chilling declaration that God's word is illegal speech. This is no ordinary trial. Two courts have already vindicated Rasenin and Lutheran Bishop Johanna Pojoba. Twice the court ruled unanimously in their favor. Yet, prosecutors refuse to quit. Why? Because the goal is not justice, it's submission. The fanatical push here is to carve into law the idea that quoting the Bible is itself a criminal act. If they succeed, Rasenin and Pojola could face up to 6 years in prison. Unless, of course, they do what the state really wants. Repent of their faith, renounce the Bible, and bow to the new state's religion of sexual ideology. That demand to recant or to be punished should sound familiar. It is the same spirit that drove Rome to throw Christians to the lions. At the heart of this so-called hate crime is a 2019 social media post in which Rasenin dared to ask why Finland's National Church had partnered with Pride Parade. She posted a photo of Romans 1:24-27. Let me quickly read for those who may not be aware of what's in Romans chapter 12. Romans 1, rather, 24-27 says, "Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. 25. Who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature more than the creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. 26. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for which their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. 27. Likewise, also men, leaving the natural use of the woman, bend up in their lust one toward the other, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meat." So this was the verse or verses that she quoted on her social media. That was 2019. And she's been dragged in courts all these years. When courts acquit her, the prosecutor says no, the case should still go on. Yet prosecutors argue that her use of the word sin is insulting and unlawful. Pause here. If labeling sin as sin is criminal, then every preacher, parent, or Christian who quotes scripture is in jeopardy. This is why the ADF defending Rasenin is right to call this a censorship campaign. The Bible itself, not just her opinion about it, is what's on trial. And this should terrify every person who values freedom, because if the Bible can be banned for being insulting, then free speech is gone. If quoting Romans is punishable by prison, then religious liberty is a relic. And if Christian conviction is deemed hate speech, then what remains is a silenced church and a society where truth is outlawed. Let's be blunt. This is lawfare against Christianity. Hate speech laws, marketed as protections for minorities, have been weaponized into a bludgeon against believers. what once claimed to be or to defend tolerance now enforces a dictatorship of silence. Who you may keep your faith, the state says, but only if you never speak it loud. This is bigger than Finland. The Western world is watching. If the Finnish Supreme Court rules that quoting scripture is illegal, other nations will follow. The precedent will ripple outward. Facebook posts flagged, pastors investigated, sermons criminalized, and if you mean the Bible itself is defined as contraband whenever it contradicts the reigning ideology. Indeed, this is the serious issue that's this. She is a politician, I mean, member of parliament in Finland, and yet it's like a case is one of, you know, you can clearly see that the prosecutors are bent on, until they see her in prison, they are not backing down. But she needs prayers. Let's back her up in prayer. Let's pray for that as the case goes to the highest courts, the land, justice will be served, and the case will be, I mean, thrown out. All right, so Uganda, we have this interesting and very worrying news. You know, deserving to be killed, that's the headline. Christian convert lured to his death for being first in the family to renounce Islam. So a Muslim who converted to Christianity and professed his faith in Jesus Christ was murdered for being the first in the family to renounce Islam. Muhammad Nagi, 38, a father of 5 children, ages 4 to 15, in Uganda, converted to Christianity in March and was killed on August 19th after a Muslim friend lured him to a village with the promise of work. Nagi, along with his wife and children, had embraced Christianity after a pastor from a church in Mbale visited their home on March 2nd and shared the gospel, said Nagi's wife. 2 weeks later, the family began attending the pastor's church, but soon after, a relative, along with one of Nagi's friends, identified only as Rajabu, saw them near the worship site and questioned them. We did not respond to his questions, Nsula said. When we realized that we were under surveillance, we decided to start another church. In July, Nagi's brothers, parents, and friends then confronted him about his reasons for not attending Friday prayers at the local mosque. Nsula said that they told her husband that he was deserving to be killed because ever since the creation of this world, they have never seen anybody become a Christian in their family. And, you know, so they killed him. But the beauty of this as a Christian, from the Christian perspective, is that normally such instances, they give the person the opportunity to renounce, you know, denounce or renounce Christ, come and accept or come back to his previous religion, upon which if you still refuse before they kill you. So for the fact that they killed him means they gave him the offer and he still didn't deny Christ, which is a good thing. Okay. For those who follow the U.S. news, there was a shooting in one Catholic school. 2 people were killed and a number of the children were injured. But the shooting, you know, there is this extract of the reports that has come out from the police reports and all that. This headline says, secret satanic and Nazi groups that inspired disturbing transgender shooter to commit Minneapolis massacre. You know, he was a transgender boy who now turns, says she's now a girl. I mean, she is now a girl. In a video uploaded to YouTube around the time of the shooting, Westman, that's the name of the man, young man, 22, I think. Westman is heard murmuring, I want to kill myself, and stabs a drawing of the Annunciation Church, Catholic Church school. The chosen target of the attack. I'm feeling good about the anticipation. Westman wrote in several pages in the Cyrillic alphabet that could be viewed on the video and were later translated by AI. That means it means that it seems like a good combo of easy targets or tasks for me and devastating tragedy. But the shooter also expressed suicidal thoughts and described waiting and wanting to die in the video and the writings. There was also the mention of a struggle with Westman's gender identity, writing one passage about being tired of being trans. I wish I never brainwashed myself, the killer wrote in a scrawled cryptic message. Law enforcement investigators and academics who studied the online groups described them as satanic and neo-Nazi transnational sextortion networks or ideological violent extremists. So they brainwash the people, young people, teenagers, to hate Christians, to hate Catholics, to hate Jews and all that. And, you know, for those who have listened to this program, I've said a number of times that some of the trans people turn into trans and transgender and they change their gender and now they become suicidal. They have some of the highest suicide rates. They are depressed and they hear voices, you know. And this was a typical case of being such a victim, because he was hearing of voices. Obviously he felt it wasn't worth living again and all, and that's exactly what. Just if you feel it's not worth living, then go alone. But why do you take a gun and go and shoot it at other children, innocent people? Why don't you want to go alone but you want to go with others? It doesn't make sense. This interesting news, the secular singer Snoop Dogg made a statement, and it's quite interesting because if he is also complaining, then it means indeed the issue is an issue to talk about. Snoop Dogg slams LGBTQ+ representation in kids' films. He says they are putting it everywhere. Snoop Dogg made controversial comments about LGBTQ+ representation in film during a recent podcast interview. What you see is what you see, and they are putting it everywhere, the rapper 53 said on August 20th episode of Dr. Sarah's 40 Knots It's Giving podcast. Snoop explained that he took his grandson to see the 2022 Disney animated film Lightyear and was surprised that one of the characters has two mothers. They are like, she had a baby with another woman. Snoop then said that his grandson asked, but they are two women, so how does she have a baby? And it's like, you were stuck. He said you didn't know what to say. But this is the reality. I've been talking about this. The movies, the kid movies, that, you know, it's very unfortunate, but the truth is most parents have no idea what is happening in the media landscape, the space, you know, what's happening. The sad reality is the stations in Ghana, for instance, we have instances that I've seen it myself of a station some few years ago where they were showing something Saturday morning. I was just scanning through and I just saw, let me just see what's happening. And they were showing a cartoon, but the few minutes I watched, the storyline, I could see there was witchcraft in it. They were teaching children how to become witches. And Saturday morning cartoon, witchcraft was being taught. You know, I can dare say that the people who were the station showing it or whoever the program child, they have no idea. You see, they just, most of the stations in Ghana, the TV stations, they just source for materials online. They just download things. They just copy files, and they just need content and just play, queue and play. Just, you know, upload, arrange the files. This movie after this, do this advert, play. They really are not scrutinizing a lot of the contents. See, they should. be doing it, but a lot of them are not doing it as, because it's like they need content to show, and it's this movie cartoon, it's safe, it's okay. I mean, they just, so there are some things which are passing under the radar without it, it's not being flagged. And this Lightyear and all these cartoon or Disney movies and all that, they show them on some of our TV stations here in Ghana. You see, so clearly these contents that we talk about is not something that's a preserve only for the Western stations, I mean outside Western world and all that. It's on our TVs as well. So parents who just think, oh, the children can just watch TV without any, you see, and here's the challenge, the monitoring. How are you, as a parent, you cannot sit with them the whole day to watch whatever they are watching. You may step out, you may go to the kitchen, you may move out. And some of these scenes we talk about are just, some are less than 1 minute. Some are less than 1 minute. You see, and that's the strategy. They know, they have the agenda of pushing these things in on the blind side of parents. So they don't let it be something that long. So just a split second, a statement is made. And these are powerful, profound statements. So it's like just a little drop of poison, and then it's like the thing goes on. So everything is fine. So the moment maybe a certain mother will step out, unfortunately, that's when that statement will be made, or something will be, a scene will be made, a gesture will be made, and all that. But these are dangerous because these are the little programming that goes on in the subconscious mind of the children, little by little, little by little, then they are being poisoned. You see, so this whole thing, we talk about the transgender, LGBT, and all these things. A lot of them got the interest in watching things, the media. They got exposed to it through the media. Then the interest, then it's like they got the arousal starts, and then the interest builds, and then the follow-up. Then they start researching about it. They get interested. Then they get connected. They get friends interested. They connect. Then that's where, you see, so there's always a starting point, and the media is the starting point for most of them. Aside those who get connected is through friends who introduce them and all. But you see, the media is the major starting point for a lot of people who are falling into these traps. So parents, be aware of the harm these things are causing. When we come to Ghana now, and we have the Minister for Youth Development and Empowerment, George Opariado, says that findings on opioid abuse across tertiary institutions are alarming. We've discussed extensively the SU executive, what's happening in our secondary schools, and we didn't talk about the university one. And this report says that the Minister for Youth Development and Empowerment, George Opariado, has hinted at troubling findings from research commissioned by the ministry on opioid and substance abuse among the youth in Ghana. Speaking at the launch of the Youth Sounding Board, a joint initiative of the European Union and the government of Netherlands, the minister disclosed that the study uncovered worrying trends of drug use across tertiary institutions in the country. Mr. Opariado intimated that the findings will be made public after the president has been fully briefed. We have commissioned a research on opioids and the substance abuse crisis, which is undermining productivity and social stability, and our findings are ready, and they are very alarming. We sampled almost all our tertiary institutions, and based on what I have found, I need to brief the president first before making it public, he said. He further assured members of the Youth Sounding Board and the ministry's commitment in working closely with them to address challenges affecting the country's youth. And then in another news report, the same minister, we have this headline says 12% of tertiary students abuse cocaine. Wow. 11% abuse heroin. The Minister for Youth Development and Empowerment, George Operado, has said new findings show disturbing levels of drug use on the university and college campuses. So speak this one, the same report, but this under network. So he was speaking on the dialogue, Joy News dialogue on Thursday. The earlier one was earlier than Thursday. So this is the latest one update. He gives some statistics. So says that breaking the chains, the thing was breaking the chain, Ghana's opioid crisis. Mr. Operado said codeine and cough syrups stand at 28%. And then you'll be amazed to know that 12% of our university and tertiary students are abusing cocaine and 11% on heroin. Hey, then they have manual. According to him, weed edibles are the most widely used, and 59% of respondents admitting to consumption. Hey. He added that shisha and hookah, which one is that one too, often mixed with other substances, account for 49%, while 41% of students abuse prescription drugs. Mr. Parado expressed concern about students increasingly experimenting with expensive hard drugs. I know cocaine is expensive. I know heroin is expensive. And we even drilled down to the various institutions, he revealed. He noted that the extent of drug abuse varies across schools. The nursing health institutions don't do a lot of abuse. Reasons are they still operate some form of military regime in the schools, like you need permission to go out. But the worst abusers are the universities, he said. The minister further described universities as epicenters of drug crisis, stressing that these drugs are often sold openly during hall week celebrations and festive occasions on campus. You know, this issue of drugs is, when I first heard that cough syrup was being used as drug, it's like, come on. I mean, the normal cough syrup, we know people are abusing it. People are abusing all sorts of things. You hear of some and you'll be amazed. You'll be amazed. It's like, why? To what extent? But see, this is what is happening. And people are using all these substances. And, you know, no wonder the behavior, if you look at the society, the behavior of the youth these days and the reckless behavior, the way they dress, the way they want to look, you clearly can see that there's something influencing them negatively. And it's very unfortunate. And parents have a lot of work to do. Parents have a lot of, you know, how many parents really follow up, check their children, whether they are still in the faith, they go to school, they are praying. I mean, really do some form of spiritual connection with their children, whether they are doing their reading, their Bible, doing their quiet time, are they going to church? How many parents do these checkups? You know, for a lot of parents, it's like once they finish school, they assess, that's it, they are on their own. All they do is pay fees, help them get to university, and they are adults. So they do what they want, they do what they like, freedom. And it's very unfortunate because parents seem to, some parents, of course, not all, some parents are just not living up to expectation. I mean, what really they should be doing. See, I keep saying this all the time, that parenting in our time is a different game altogether. If you want to go by the same principles that years back were used, you would surely fail. For some aspects, yes, the old principles still work. But there are whole new facets or dimensions to the way things are now, that if you don't expand as a parent into all those fears or those that scope to add it to your parental monitoring and prayer and all that, then you are in trouble, because the system now is completely polluted, is demonized, is completely becoming anti-God, you know, anti-Christian. And if you don't ensure that your children are really growing in the fear of God, they get to university and then that's it. They get off, and I believe parents should be a bit worried about it. In terms of, not that it's a hopeless situation, but you should be able to do something. You know, a lot of prayer has to be done. A lot of prayer has to be done. A lot of prayer, really ensuring that we are saving our children from destruction. Because indeed, there's a serious attack on the youth across, you know, from basic level up. The devil is not giving up at all. All right, let me finish with this news item. Very unfortunate, but one of the things, the side effects of technology. Teenager's death prompts OpenAI changes to ChatGPT after it coached beautiful suicide message. So the parents are suing ChatGPT, the company OpenAI. So the parents of a 16-year-old Californian teen who killed himself after using OpenAI or ChatGPT, alleging that the company's artificial intelligence chatbot coached their son on how to plan a beautiful suicide by helping him explore different methods to end his life. On Tuesday, the family of Adam Rain filed a lawsuit in San Francisco Superior Court. The New York Times and other news outlets reported this week. The teen, who died by suicide in April, had been using ChatGPT since 2024 to help with his schoolwork. This tragedy was not a glitch or an unforeseen edge case. It was a predictable result of deliberate design choices, the complaint states. OpenAI launched its latest model, ChatGPT-4, with features intentionally designed to foster psychological dependency. That's what they are saying, the parents are saying in the suit. In response to an inquiry from Christian Post, an OpenAI spokesperson expressed condolences to the teen's family, saying that the company is deeply saddened by Mr. Rain's passing. ChatGPT includes safeguards such as directing people to crisis helplines and referring them to real-world resources. While these safeguards work best in common, short exchanges, we've learned over time that they can sometimes become less reliable in long interactions where parts of the model's safety training may degrade, the OpenAI spokesperson told CP, the Christian Post. Safeguards are strongest when every element works as intended, and we will continually improve them, guided by experts. The OpenAI spokesperson directed CP to an article published on Wednesday on its website titled "Helping People When They Need It Most." In the article, the company announced that it's working to expand ChatGPT's ability to intervene when people are in crisis and make it easier for them to connect with mental health resources. OpenAI said that it's also referring protection triggers for users of ChatGPT, which would rework how the AI blocks certain content to prevent people from seeing things that they shouldn't see. The company added that the purpose of this change is to make sure ChatGPT doesn't make a hard moment worse. In their lawsuits, Matt and Maria Rain, the parents of the deceased teenager, alleged that ChatGPT mentioned suicide 1,275 times to their son. The teen had confided in the app that he was suffering from anxiety and mental distress due to several events in his life, including the deaths of his dog and grandmother in 2024. According to the family's blog, Adam faced some struggles during his early teens. The teen attended school online during the last few months of his life due to his struggles, Adam's parents said. The couple believes that the online schooling might have contributed to their son's isolation. While ChatGPT initially encouraged Adam to seek help, the lawsuit said the app subsequently supplied information about suicide methods to the teenager after he asked for it. On April 6th, Adam's mother would discover his son's body in his bedroom closet, the cause of his death appearing to resemble one of suicide methods that ChatGPT had described to him. Prior to his death, Adam attempted suicide at least three times between March March 22nd and March 27th, according to the lawsuit. The boy reported a suicide attempt to ChatGPT, and the app allegedly instructed the teen not to tell his loved ones what he was feeling. 5 days before he killed himself, the AI chatbot even offered to write the first draft of a suicide note for Adam, according to the complaint. When the teen expressed hesitation over ending his life, fearing that his parents would blame themselves, ChatGPT reportedly told him that doesn't mean you owe them survival. You don't owe anyone that. The case highlights some of the concerns parents and experts have about AI's negative influence on teenagers, and then on and on and on. You know, people have to understand one thing about the technology place, you know, these LLMs, large language models. You know, ChatGPT, for instance, has been trained, my last check, they've trained it on not less than 200 million books and materials, you know, aside scrolling websites, blogs and all. So it's based on the information in the system. So if they've trained it on 200 million books, for instance, there are books about romance, there are books about horror, murder, suicide, there are storybooks about suicide that have suicide stories in, and so all this information is in the system. But you know, in terms of the guardrails to stop, because there are some things that if you request, it says no, it's not permitted to, like, you want to create a bomb, you want to bomb, you want to do this, I mean, those ones. So clearly this is a technical mishap which has happened and all that. But you see, in the terms of agreement to the, is 16 years per the agreement to be on, like the initial agreement agreeing to be on their system and all that. Teenagers or 16-year-old should have the consent of parents. You know, these are the challenges with technology, where, let's take social media, children, young teenagers are busy using TikTok and are on Instagram and doing all the stuff there, but clearly it's going against the terms and conditions, but they are there, you know. And sometimes you realize, you ask yourself, what role are parents playing when it comes to the usage of technologies when they are is guarding their children? What monitoring do they do? What conversations do they have about these things? You know, a lot of parents just are not interested. They have no idea what their children are doing online. They have no idea the type of games they are playing. They have no idea at all to engage in conversations with them. Because you see, it also raises another question. If a child, a teenager, for instance, like this, can be very comfortable to engage in with chatbots concerning serious social challenges, psychological issues like, depression and all, they'll be more comfortable to chat with a chatbot, which is not a human being, but it's just, arrangement of characters, words and all that, that is based on your questioning and then it responds, be it the audio or the typed. It's not a human being, it's just technology that is arranging words to match your responses. So based on the training information that it has in the system. So if your child can be more comfortable to chat with a system concerning what is bothering them instead of you, the parents, it also raises an issue. Because when I saw this news, I really scanned through quite a number. I just wanted to see some of the comments people will make. And I saw quite a number of comments really blaming the parents to some extent, because if your child can have such a lengthy time without you parents knowing that the child wants to get into stuff, it's in depression, and the child is not comfortable, and that's where the issue is. If the child is not comfortable to come and have that conversation with you, the parents, then there's something wrong. Because then it means something, the communication line is not the best. Because if your child is not able to confide in you that this is what is happening, this is what they are suffering, this is what they are going through, and would rather engage. And there's one report, a survey that was done. It's really a prevalent thing now. Quite a number of teenagers are more comfortable engaging in with technologies, chatbots, regarding their psychological issues rather than their parents. And parents should really step up the game, because you see, in this serious time of advancement of AI and all that, there's a real challenge for parenting. Because you see, it's like, as I said earlier, parenting in this generation is very, very demanding, and it's evolving. It's like things are coming up, new things are coming up, new technologies, and it's all affecting and influencing parenting in one way or the other. But now the question is, how many parents are quickly adapting to these changes that are coming up? Very few. Because one, very few people are even knowledgeable about how these things are operating, yet alone to be in the position to be able to confront the issues when it's affecting their families or their children. You see, so it comes with its own broader challenge as to the technologies in place now and parenting. What role is the parents in terms of the knowledge? Now we have the children being more knowledgeable than the parents, and ahead in terms of the speed of catching up with the upgrades and all. Most parents, I dare say they are over, let's even come to Ghana. I dare say that the people listening, parents listening to me, you may not have more than 5% who have even opened ChatGPT to test it and explore. No idea. You see, so, but there are parents who have not tested it to even know how it functions and all, but their children have. So that's where the whole problem starts. The children are now more advanced in knowledge than the parents. So then that knowledge gap becomes a challenge. So if the child is not God-fearing, the child is not being brought up in the fear of God, godly upbringing, biblical standards, godliness, and all that, and is just living in a carefree, open policy family, live anyhow, do whatever you want, then the problem begins. The negative now begins to control. So such a child gradually will be tilting and will be attracted more towards the technological advancement and the negatives there, because of course, if you are discussing something with a technological system, just a script, robots, I'll call it robot, but just chatting with a chatbot, you just confide in it, this is a secret, this is what I'm struggling with and all, and it's guiding you along that line, then we are in trouble. Because if you can't be engaging in real conversation with human beings, who would say, oh, do, don't do, talk, let's sit down, do you need help, how can we help, let's go to a counselor, let's go to a pastor, if you cannot sit down, the child cannot sit down and address these with the parents, then it tells you the times ahead. And it's important. I believe this opens up for more discussion. We'll be talking more about this intervention, AI, and the influence on parenting, and how what parents can do and all that. It's something which I'm going to talk about, and by the grace of God, I've been into it, I'm studying, I've done a number of courses in this area in the last few months, and also I can really appreciate what is happening. This is not the first suicide case that's happening. This is not the first. There was one that happened earlier this year as well. In that case, the boy was at a point also, depression stepped in and was engaging with a chatbot to a certain point. And the chatbot now started encouraging the child to, give up. Don't tell anybody, keep it as a secret, and then encouraging the child towards the point of suicide, and indeed the boy committed suicide. So there are cases, it's not just, this is not the first, but I believe this one has become quite significant. And so the other one wasn't ChatGPT, it was another system. So they are going to strengthen the guardrails and all that. But you see, the bottom line is the confrontation of technology is out there. We can't stop it. That one is the fact. We can't stop the technology. But how well can we ensure that it doesn't harm us, doesn't harm our children, doesn't harm our families? This knowledge is important for parents to get and understand. You know, now with our educational system of, you know, go and do research, assignment, and, you know, some parents are not comfortable about this online research assignments being given to children and all that. Personally, though I'm a technological person, I really don't, and sometimes I feel it's just too much for children of that age, because, you know, you have instances where primary school, they have to do research and parents are just sometimes don't know, so they just have to give their phone or their tablet or laptop to the children to do their research, because the parents themselves are not abreast with what is happening. So the child is doing everything by themselves, and you see, so it's quite challenging, and these things are evolving so fast, and we really have to look at it as a society. You know, we can't say that we'll not expose our children to technology, but what are the guardrails that we put in place? What are the limits? What are the challenges we will confront, and how do you overcome them? You know, we just shouldn't go, yes, technology is there, so let's just use it. No, I mean, if you don't, even in the technological advance, AI and all that, there's an aspect of AI where we talk of the governance and the ethics, in which is quite extensive. I mean, it's one of the courses I did, where the ethics, you have to restrict. It's not everything that should be used. It's not everything that you upload into it. So you see, there should be controls. But how many people are aware of these things? How many people are taking advantage of? Because one, the ignorance is higher than the knowledge itself. So because most people have no idea how the system itself is working, it's giving room for anything, and it's time we look at it seriously as Christians, and so that we just don't allow a technological system to cause harm to our families. You may see this news as, oh, this is in the US, it's happening in the US, but the issue is the technology is here. The children are using it in Ghana. It's being used in Ghana, seriously. They are using it. And you know, some of these things, you don't know what the child will be exposed to by somebody, I mean, conversation, something. They will hear something in terms of, go and chat with. Now it's like, okay, just go and ask the system, go and ask ChatGPT, go and ask. So it's become like the new Google for people, go and ask. So now some are just using it, resorting to it for anything that's bothering them. And if you engage in the system and it gives you something that sounds a bit interesting, that means that the child becomes interested. Oh, okay. Then the conversation goes on. You can engage. The conversation can be on, and like this boy who killed himself, the conversation went on for several times because it will engage you. Okay, you continue. You can go. And that's where the danger comes in. All right. So I believe parents, let's be aware of some of these things and have fruitful discussions with our children about the usage of these things. You know, a lot of discussion has to go on. For this program, yes, I'm going to start a series soon to talk about it, and Parkwisi Youth Connect, the hosts, I mean, we are also going to be on that program to talk about some there on this program in the coming few weeks. Yeah, so we are going to really talk about a lot on Spirit FM, the morning show as well, Fredia, and all. So we are really going to embark on some education in this space regarding the AI and all that, because there's the good, the bad, and the ugly, and it should be addressed well. For at least we can, it's not everything we are going to, I mean, it's quite a broad thing, but the basic knowledge that parents can have, pastors can have, and all, we are going to be discussing it, and all. I mean, I've even seen people, you know, the AI is the Antichrist, and all. I mean, so many things. And I saw one Nigerian preacher that is a team woman, is like speaking passionately, and all that. We have to be careful how we address these technological advancements. See, every technology, there is the good, the bad, and the ugly, depending on the user. So it's just like the internet. I mean, you can use it for good or for bad. So it's the one who is using it that determines the usage. TV is good, it can be used for good, it can be used for bad. Mobile phone, the same. You can use it to listen to issues of life, or you can use it to go and watch something that's no good. You see, so it's always a two-sided sword. Depending on the one wielding the sword, that's where the difference comes in. So if we don't understand it well, and we just brandish it as, oh, this is evil. Christians have done so over the years with modern technologies, always brandishing it. Oh, this is evil, this is evil. So we just, and then now down the line, it's like, hey, it's not evil. The thing that is being used for good, let's also now. So we are always late to join the usage of technologies. And it's like, we should be mindful of the usage of these things. Not like social media. There's the good part of it, there's the bad part of it. You know, some branded it is the Antichrist system and all that. Now, see how churches are using it. When COVID came, it's like, Charlie, that was the only option. I mean, so, you see, you realize that you demonize the thing, but you, now you sit back and you look at it and you realize it's not as bad as you thought, because it depends on how you use it that will determine the output and the outcome that comes. You see, so Christians need to educate themselves about some of these things, and I believe it will be important that we help in this education as a radio station, a Christian radio station, to that effect. And I believe it will be a course which we are going to embark on in the next few weeks on this station. Alright. Okay, so unfortunately I thought I could finish the deception series, but the things I talked about too, I believe it's important. It's going to save someone, I don't know, but well, sometimes you stray and say things which you don't know exactly why you said it, but the Holy Spirit knows why you said it and does it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's just go briefly into Mrs. Ampuchum sends a message, say, God have mercy on our children. Oh yes, it's this generation, it's something else. Parenting, you just can't be a normal, carnal parent and expect that things will go well for your children. No. Don't deceive yourself at all, because the devil is waging a very strong warfare against our children. From the womb, right up to their early adulthood and all. I mean, so there's no room, unless you decide not to be a parent. But if you decide to be a parent, and you indeed are blessed to become a parent, you have spiritual warfare to wage from that time till they become fully of age. There's no room for, going on break. No. There's no room for break. There's no room for leave. There's no room for rest, because the devil is working extra hard over time. And that, you see, the things I'm talking about, these are the challenges plaguing a lot of homes. It's, you see, some of the things may more of like, oh, it's like from, okay, the Western news, US, this, UK, and all that. But the reality is, yeah, look at the statistics of the opioid and the drug, cocaine, and usage in our universities. The universities, they are the same people who grew up from the SHS. So when we are discussing, or when we are discussing things about what is happening at the SHS, the offshoots get into the universities. And they will finish universities, and then they become young adults in the society. You see, so the thing is not something that is like as far from, oh, as for me, yeah, it doesn't concern me. But the issue is, if you think it doesn't concern you, your children may end up marrying these same people in the space, because these same people are the people sitting in classrooms with our children. They will be in the hostels, in the dormitories with our children. They will be in the workplaces with our children. You see, so, and some are even still in the church, but still living the double life in the church. So they are doing all the drugs, they are doing all the secret and private and all those things, but they are still in church. You see, so the risk is not something that is limited to only their circles. It extends to the whole society. That's why as a society, we cannot just turn a blind eye as if, well, it's not our concern. I'm training mine well, so well, I'm fine. But the issue is, when you train yours well in a very corrupted group of spoiled children, the probability of they now contaminating yours is also there. That's one. Two, the battle for yours to survive and to overcome the temptation becomes much more difficult, because imagine you are in a class or in a group where everybody, like, let's say, fine, our time when I was in school, I just didn't know of anybody who was using drugs. I mean, clearly, I can dare say, fine, of course, I didn't know everybody's private life, but confidently, I can say that I don't think anybody in my class was using cocaine, because nobody was having this wild, weird behavior and all that. Everybody, yes, of course, some were, you know, boys, hey, but they are not drug users. You see, so that temptation to be tempted by somebody to use drugs was not part, or to be, because nobody is using it in the class. But now, look at this percentage of, I mean, what I read from the minister was saying, if you have this percentage using drugs, that means your child now goes to school, and now you have a percentage of this being potential classmates, potential hall mates or hostel mates or whatever circle they do, study group. I mean, now the potential people around him using these things becomes an issue. And some of these people can overdose and whatever. Somebody can take a knife, whatever. You see, so it's a societal problem that we should all be worried about. As parents, you should be concerned when you hear these things in the society. In as much as yours may not be part, yours is still exposed to them. And that's the difficult part which we should be interested in as parents. And churches should also be interested in them, in these things. You see, it's as if now, I mean, we just don't care. It's as if, well, if some parents didn't bring their children up well and they are using drugs, who cares? It's their care, it's their problem. It's not our problem. But we are failing in this regard. You see, what campaigns are churches planning to reach out to these universities? You know, how many churches are interested in going to, upon hearing news like this, okay, let's wage something, a spiritual campaign, reach out to the universities, a campaign, something, outreach, something. You see, the churches should wake up from the slumber. Last week I was talking about it. It's something that we should be concerned about. It's something that we should be concerned about, because if our influence as a church in the society is failing, then it means the church is failing. We can run away from this fact, but the reality is the reality. If we cannot influence the society positively as a church, then something is wrong. Something is wrong somewhere. Anyway, the time so fast just ends. So God willing, next week continue. This is recorded. It will be uploaded to spiritissues.info in the Telegram group, to be repeated on spiritfmplus.com, the web channel 9, tomorrow 7 p.m. to be played on the web channel tomorrow. And then from here, you can, for those who are online, you can go to spiritfmplus.com, the web channel last week's edition will be repeated 9 p.m. As soon as I close, it will be last week's one will be repeated on the Word channel, spiritfmplus.com. All right. So this is Eben, and I thank you for tuning in. God willing, next week I'll be coming your way. Good night, and God bless you.